There's something called the revenue to price ratio. That's really going to determine not only like kind of which market you're in, but which property and which market it works. And if your ratio is above like a 20 to 30%, that's usually going to be something you might want to dig deeper into.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
All right, Chris, man, welcome to the pod. Nice to meet you.
Hey, good to be here, Justin. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no worries. I'm excited to jump in. So I guess let's get started. Give us everybody kind of a quick intro, who you are, what you're up to, and then we can kind of, you know, talk through some stuff.
Okay, cool. My name's Chris Leverick. So I am a retired IT engineer. I was in the Air Force for about 4 years as a firefighter, became an engineer about 2010, and then did that all the way up to 2018, and just got done really with that career. And I started real estate in 2018. So I did some overlap. I was an IT engineer investing in real estate for about 4 years, quit my job last year, not 2018.
Okay.
And yeah, I've done small multifamily, got started in duplexes and some quads and some five units, and then really did my first syndication where I raised equity on multiple from about 10 different investors to do a 16 unit apartment. And then I partnered with some other investors on bigger apartments, scaled up from there. And then I started focusing on short-term rentals. So I've partnered on a couple short-term rentals, joint ventures and syndications. I run a fund now, a 506c fund, where we invest into about big portfolio short-term rentals. And then I also teach it. So I have a course and a coaching program.
Interesting. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. So let's kind of go back to the beginning. It sounds like there was some overlap in your W-2 job and starting to invest in real estate. So let's go earlier. How did you learn about real estate as an investment vehicle, and what got you kind of started in the whole real estate investing game?
Right. So I had a 45-minute commute when I was working as an IT engineer. So like many, I'm sure we get sick of the radio and you pop on whatever you can find. So I did some audibles in the beginning, and then you get bored with a book maybe. So I started listening to podcasts. Bigger Pockets was one of the ones I settled on. And
got it.
There were a couple other syndication podcasts I got into, but Bigger Pockets was the start. So
yeah, Bigger Pockets is great. That's kind of what kind of got the bug started with me. The challenge that I found with Bigger Pockets is they have a guest on every week that is super successful in some niche of real estate investing. So I was like, oh, that sounds like an interesting strategy. Let me go dive into that for 5 minutes and then I'll try something different. So yeah, I had to stop chasing the shiny object when I first got into it because it was all exciting, right? Because once you start to learn about it, you want to kind of like keep peeling back the onion. So had you thought about investing in real estate before you found Bigger Pockets, or like how did the, okay, real estate's interesting. I'm a W-2 worker. I've got this 45-minute commute. How did you kind of transition to actually putting some capital up and doing some investing?
Yeah, that was the first time really real estate was an option for me, or I was even thinking about it. My family never owned a home even. We rented all throughout my life.
Wow, okay.
So it was very foreign to me. It was kind of taught that, oh, we'd never have enough money, never have enough money. So I had to shift that mindset a bit. My first investment, I took $6,000 from a Roth IRA, borrowed about $20,000 from a bank, found another family member for $30,000, and then found a private lender for the rest. And I bought a $209,000 property. So properties. It was two duplexes. But so the thing was, like, I didn't even have money, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
I had a 401k, but it's really hard to pull a lot of that out unless you have like a self-directed or something. So
right.
I used my Roth. Yeah. And credit cards. I use credit cards too. So I had to be creative.
So talk more about that first deal, because obviously some people, and even I thought this in the very beginning, like I hear all these strategies of like buy all this property with no money down, no money out of your pocket, like use other people's money. And it sounds great. But once you start to do it, it's not as easy as just flipping on a light switch, right? You actually have to work at it. So it sounds like you used a few different vehicles to acquire that first property and walk through that. But also like, how was it? Was that $209,000 property, was it a buy and hold strategy, or what was your thought process kind of going into that deal? And how are you going to pay back those multiple people from an investors and also banks?
Yeah. I mean, I was nervous as hell the first time. I borrowed a bank loan unsecured from a bank. Well, obviously from a bank, but my personal bank, and it was 16% unsecured. Wow. This was 2018. So maybe that seems normal now, but back then 16% was considered pretty high.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, like, I hope I know what I'm doing. So I read a book. I mean, Brandon Turner's book, the book on real estate property investing or something. It's like really a guidebook if you want to get started. I thought that was a perfect one. So I was just trusting that they knew what they were doing. The goal really was to reuse equity. I didn't have much of it. My partner and brother at the time didn't have much either. So we were really like, we need to reuse. The strategy, of course, was the BRRRR. That buy, renovate, refinance, rent kind of thing. Pulling all your equity out was important. So a lot of the first deals I did actually didn't cash flow very well. They maybe had like $100 of cash flow because we pulled all the equity out.
Right.
That's a great thing. You get all your equity back, but now you have a really high mortgage.
Right. So, yeah. You're not actually making a ton of money, but you're able to scale. And the volume is kind of your play there versus like one deal having a lot of cash flow.
Right. Totally. So that was the play for the first four we did, actually.
Interesting. So where do you live and where did you find those deals and how did you find them?
I live in Phoenix, Arizona. And so a lot of people would be go, oh, awesome market, 2018. Like I was scared to invest here. I thought it was too expensive. It's now it's like overly expensive. But I invested in Durham, North Carolina, my first
property.
My brother lived about 3 hours south on Fort Bragg. He was in the military down there. And so I was like, well, if nothing goes wrong, he can at least drive 3 hours up. And so that was actually what a lot of new investors do. They go, oh, I'll buy somewhere near me in case something goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it was
remote. Yeah, Raleigh, I remember in 2020 when I got into kind of the bigger deal size, Raleigh was already blowing up. And I'm sure in 2018, it was still, there's a lot of research, a lot of schools like in that Raleigh, Durham kind of little pocket, the triangle, I guess they call Charlotte, Winston-Salem, Durham. So there's a lot going on there. So you kind of probably got in at a decent time because obviously it's only gone up from there.
Yeah. It was great. I mean, we were just felt we got lucky, really. It was a private lender that gave us 70% of the all cash purchase. So then we were able to refinance them out and keep the property basically for ourselves. And really, when we got it reappraised on the back end, so we bought them and they were 104K each on the front, it's 209. And then when we appraised them on the back, they were 240. So we put in about 70, 80,000 into the property itself.
Yeah.
Because they were 1940s. They were pretty run down. But the thing is, though, if you have such a big appraisal, like you really don't want a mortgage that big because it's not going to cash flow.
So yeah, you're not going to get anywhere near the cash flow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking like, yeah, what, 370 or something was a mortgage, which was like, oh, it was 420. Yeah, 480 was the appraisal. So around like 360s, 370, they were never going to cash flow. So we actually took a little less than that. But
yeah. That's interesting. And so you're working a full-time job, your brother's in the military. How did you kind of carve out the time to kind of be more of a passive, active investor, right? Because you're obviously having to find these deals. You're having to kind of figure out the financing. And then were you managing them yourselves or did you have a local property management company kind of helping you kind of manage the day-to-day?
I guess the schedule really was go to work or analyze, do the work before I go to work. So kind of like make sure everything's going on. We didn't get voicemails. We don't have to set up contractors or utilities, whatever. Do that in the morning usually. Take the commute in, maybe do a call on the way to a property manager. We did have a property manager. And then really I would hop out of meetings and like take calls if needed or fix things if needed. When you're setting up utilities and when you're doing the contractor part of it, it's a pain because you're just like always managing them or you should be. Because they'll go and do their own thing typically. Having a really good property manager was key. We vetted like three or four of them before we went in.
Yeah.
And we had a really great guy. He doubled as an agent. And so he was kind of vested in making sure our deal worked out.
Right. Because you're going to buy more deals if things go well, right?
Yeah. Credibility and testimonial and all that kind of stuff. So he was great. And he's still our property manager on the properties. So
that's awesome. I'm going to take a quick sponsor break. But when we come back, I'm going to talk about kind of the transition from the smaller deals that you're doing to some of these short-term rentals and some of the bigger deals. So we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@hiretomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We were talking about kind of your entry point into the real estate investing game, talked about some deals that you found in Raleigh, North Carolina. And so now let's kind of fast forward a little bit, right? You have these deals, you're starting to figure out and get some confidence in your real estate investing journey. Talk about the level up, right? So some people start single family and because they want to buy one property, have one tenant, kind of start there. Some people like you started with a multiple unit. So 2 to 4, that's how I got started. But then you jumped up, it sounds like, to some syndication, some raising some money, and then obviously into a fund and short-term rentals and all that. So kind of let's walk through some of that because I think it's an interesting kind of transition from smaller deals to bigger deals and from there.
Yeah, sure. So I guess starting out with the goal, the end in mind is important. You know, you probably hear that all the time, but people usually kind of chase random techniques to see which one aligns with them. And they kind of spend a couple of years doing that. So the key for us was we knew that we wanted to get good at investing estate. We saw the advantage to scaling was really following the markets. And so that's why we did our first property remotely. And we did it after that going forward. The second scenario, we knew we didn't have the capital. So we wanted to get good at finding capital.
Okay.
So every deal we did, and to this day, I haven't done a deal by myself with my own capital. I've had my capital in some of the deals, but I always go find a partner with some kind of capital, whether that's private lender, joint venture, syndication, something. That was a main function of our goal. So that was the two scenarios, be able to invest remotely and then be able to find capital. And so that's kind of how we gravitated into syndication.
Okay.
Like I said, we did private lender deals in the beginning and they're very cool. You can line them up because you keep a lot of the property. We did joint ventures, so 50-50 ownership deals with smaller properties under 500K, under a million.
Yeah.
And then syndications was a natural gravitation into that where we're pooling 10 to 20 investors for a smaller apartment and then, you know, unlimited on bigger apartments. That really allowed you to scale. And for us, it allowed us to scale and build a business around it. Not everybody wants to do that. Some people just want to own a couple properties. So that was our goal. And that's why I say, like, start with that goal. And that's really going to help you kind of like gravitate to which one you want to do.
Yeah. And so is the we in your conversation, is that you and your brother, or are you guys still kind of in lockstep on this?
Yeah. So my brother was the guy that jumped in with me back in 2018 and we did it together. And actually our wives are with us now. They work in the business as well. We're a little bigger now. We have about 9 people, but yeah, still the same people. Yeah.
That's awesome. So let's talk about your transition out of the W-2, right? Because obviously a lot of people, when they catch the bug of real estate investing, it's either I want financial freedom, I want to build some financial stability outside of my W-2 or outside of the stock market and everything. How did you kind of start? Was that ultimately the goal, was to quit the W-2 and go full-time into real estate? And then how did you kind of build that plan to get to that, to the end in mind, like you mentioned?
It was always kind of that goal. I really liked being an IT engineer. I loved creating, like I was building data centers. So servers and networks, I made companies run basically all the infrastructure, but I really enjoyed it. I just saw that it was very repetitive and I could see myself in my 50s doing the same stuff I'd been doing in my 30s.
Yeah.
And still fighting budgets and still fighting corporate and dealing with outages and weekend work. And so I kind of saw the writing on the wall. I saw also, I didn't necessarily want to be those older groups that I could see, the 50-year-old guy who was now being phased out.
Yeah.
That 16 or the 20-year-old guys coming in. So I wanted to have an out. I wanted to have a plan B. And real estate seemed to be the way that a lot of wealthy people stay wealthy or grow their wealth. And so I was like, okay, well, that's something I should consider. I was always considering, when am I going to get out? It happened a little sooner, I think. Not everybody needs to quit your job. You can literally, you know, build wealth while you have a stable job. You don't have to quit, but it's up to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are kind of that W-2 worker. They like their job or they make good money and they want other options, right, outside of just company 401k in the stock market. Were you also doing like passive investing to kind of continue to build that wealth, or what advice would you kind of think or provide people that are in that, I don't know what to do, how to get started in kind of this passive investing journey?
Yeah. So definitely passive investing. I have a whole life policy that I invest with. So it's kind of like 401k, but an insurance policy. And that's me building my passive empire while I have active deals where I'm building more, I'm more in them and managing them. Sometimes I invest in my deals, but the whole goal is to diversify a bit so you don't get all in one box. But yeah, it depends. I kind of got lost on the question.
But so I guess let's transition a little bit to what kind of advice maybe would you give somebody that's sitting in that W-2, maybe back in 2016, 17, when you were getting started and you're like, okay, where do I start? You obviously went the active route, right? You wanted to find deals. But let's say somebody doesn't have the interest in doing that. They just have cash in a bank earning 0.1% interest. What kind of first step maybe would you kind of give them as far as advice? Start getting into the passive investing side of real estate, whether it's a syndication or a fund, you know, something like that.
Yeah. So definitely don't quit your job. Like if you enjoy what you're doing, if it's a passion for you or you find purpose in it or you're making good money, there's no reason to go quit and relearn something. If you have an efficient machine already producing income and giving you stability and that kind of thing. If you have the passion, you want to quit, that's an entirely different scenario, kind of what I did. But no, if you are trying to do this passively and you're just starting, like you can listen to the same podcasts that I listen to and just understand your goal is to understand a strategy you like, get to familiar with it. And then you can go on places like BiggerPockets and LinkedIn and find search with just keywords for a group that's actually doing that. So if you're looking for multifamily syndication and or multi-apartment complex investing, I bet you if you search that kind of thing in BiggerPockets or LinkedIn, you'll see posts from people who are talking about that. And typically those people will be able to guide you to some type of investment and then you can vet them and get familiar with it. The first thing I'd say for people, though, is go learn about the strategy, read a couple books, read a couple podcasts, get familiar with it. It's actually very easy to understand, in my opinion, more easy to understand than a 401k or a stock market plan, or because a lot of times we don't know what businesses are doing. We don't know what the stocks are doing necessarily, but property, we rent it, we make money. I get it. It's simple in a way.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think when I got started, our first deal that we did outside of the duplex that my wife and I bought was we wanted to passively invest because we wanted to, I knew ultimately, like I'm an entrepreneur, I have my own business, recruiting business and a real estate business. So I knew I wanted to kind of get out of the rat race, if you will. So we kind of put a plan together to do that. But if I was in a job that I loved and making a lot of money, I would love to just give people my money and have them manage properties and deal with all this stuff and then just get a return, right? Because that's the nice thing. Once these properties are humming and they're pushing out cash for a passive investor, you're just collecting checks, right? You're giving out money and you're getting more money back in return. So it can be a beautiful thing when it all works out.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to kind of talk a little about your short-term rental stuff, because obviously there's over the last kind of number of years, short-term rentals, Airbnb has blown up. Everybody and their brother is investing or teaching about it or talking about it. So I have not jumped into the short-term rental game yet. It's something that's on my to-do list. I've been talking to a lot of people that help people invest and all that fun stuff. So how and why do you kind of make that shift to short-term rentals? And is that your area of focus right now? Or is it another area, meaning you've got multifamily syndication and short-term rentals, and you're kind of going at it with a couple of different avenues.
Yeah, so that's great. So I like both of them. I like multifamily and short-term rentals. The reason why I started teaching it was really to have an option for those who don't want to passively invest. And the big thing I found is short-term rentals kind of give a lot more cash flow up front. So there is a scenario, a lot of people are concerned about the market, or might have heard the term Airbnb bust and all this stuff like that. Every market's local, so every property is also local itself. Even neighborhoods can be completely different if they're just right next to each other.
Yeah.
And the same is true in multifamily. So in short-term rentals, though, if a person's getting started, and let's say their goal is cash flow, or their goal is to scale, their goal is to get more equity, more capital, a short-term rental can get you there a little faster simply because you're going to have more cash flow. So you're not necessarily playing the appreciation game like you might in multifamily, where you multifamily typically you're driving up rents when you buy a property and you improve it, but you're typically getting paid on the back end when you sell it for a new price point. Short-term rental doesn't necessarily need to be sold in 5 years, but in that time, it is going to be very cash flow heavy. So a person could build up capital a lot faster to buy the second one
Yeah.
Versus the alternative is like, hey, you do what I did. You go buy a duplex. I mean, I don't know about your duplex or not, but typically duplex, you're making like 1200 to, I don't know, let's say 5,000 even in a year. Okay.
Yep.
Well, that would take a long time to save up for another property.
And especially when you've got to invest back into the property with a roof leak. Yeah. It works out really well on paper, but then you're like, oh crap, I got to actually like operate the thing. And yeah, there's some nuance to it that the spreadsheet that you have doesn't really tell you. So that's fair.
Totally. So it just depends on, it was an angle for people to get started a little quicker, get started in and use the hospitality space to scale a little faster. Plus there's great tax benefits, which you can't really get in a duplex. You can get awesome tax benefits with short-term rental against your W-2 income. So very cool strategy that people have been using.
So wait, talk more about, I'm not as familiar with short-term rentals. So, you know, this would be education for me too. So, because obviously when you do a syndication deal, you're not offsetting your active income or your W-2 income, but you can with short-term rentals. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. So it's a little loophole that they've got for short-term rentals. So since you're the active manager, as long as you put 500 hours on the property,
okay,
and you're renting under 2 weeks at a time. So I think
the duration of rent. So you can't have somebody there for a month at a time.
Exactly. Now you're breaking the rules. So
got it.
It's no longer really going to be a long-term rental. It's considered a short-term rental. And due to that, if you do a cost segregation study on it and you spend 500 hours in management for a year, you can actually get all of that depreciation to offset active income. It's one of the great scenarios. So we can't do that in syndication unless you can't really do that in multifamily unless one of you in a marriage or a joint partner is a real estate professional. Some people have heard of that, but this is one way someone who's working in W-2 could have one short-term rental and get some tax benefits really just by managing the one short-term rental themselves. So
got it. That's interesting. I'll have to peel back the onion on that in my own time because we could probably talk about that for another half an hour. But so talk about your coaching thing. So if somebody is out there listening to this and they're like, ooh, I've heard short-term rentals, how do you help? Maybe walk through a high-level kind of pitch on kind of how that works.
Yeah. So we did a course that is a framework for how to find, fund, acquire, and manage a short-term rental.
Okay.
And we've had a lot of people that went out and got that framework. But what we found out is a lot of those people need some accountability and they need a little coaching.
Yeah.
So we packaged it back up and now we have it. It's a vacation rental masterclass method. So it's all packaged up now. It's a 90-day sprint with Q&A, access to coaching weekly, and then access to a community weekly or for life. It's a Facebook Q&A.
Okay.
So really, it's giving people 90 days with this coaching angle, plus all the content and the course, two courses in there actually, to use that 90 days, get the Q&As, the questions answered live if they need to every week.
Yep.
And they get a calculator and all that kind of stuff like that. So we're really trying to give them all the tools that they could use to go find a market they like, fund it, whether they have no money or not, and then acquire it. So how do you underwrite it and close it and then manage it? What apps do you use and how the heck do all the pricing and all that kind of stuff? So that's really what it's about. It's an A to Z guide.
Got it. So that's something that somebody could do even if they are a W-2 employee, because obviously it sounds like if you set the systems up correctly and you buy in the right area, it's more of setting things up and having your team that you build kind of help manage and do all that.
We manage six. So I think like in our internal team, I should say my family. Yeah. So one person could probably manage one to two without really like much systems. Once you get to the two to four, you're really going to want to have like systems, standard operating procedures, automations, automatic emails, and all that kind of stuff like that. But all that is in the program that teaches how to do that.
Got it. And then you mentioned something about a fund, I think that you're rolling out or have, or talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So we do have a 506C fund. I'll be rolling out another 506B fund here shortly. You did ask the question, we do multifamily. Like we raise private equity for multifamily and short-term rentals. So when we're not actively coaching or teaching or going and hunting for a short-term rental ourselves, we actually have a passive investment opportunity through funds. And we do that because we can go partner with really key operators who are crushing it out there in the asset management space and raise private equity and give those opportunities to sophisticated and accredited investors in our network or people who don't want to actively go buy property. And there's people on both sides. So that's what we want, options for both.
Yeah, I mean, the fund model is a great model. Some of the returns are different unless you're investing in an individual syndication, but sometimes it can be more beneficial to be in a fund because you're pulling your assets typically and you're spreading your risk around to different things. So that's awesome. And I guess, what markets are you seeing in the short-term rental space that are really attractive? And are you buying luxury, high-end, multi-million dollar properties that are renting out for thousands a night? Or are you buying a condo in Miami that's renting out for a couple hundred?
Great question. So it depends on the market. So we ended up doing luxury.
Okay.
Personally, in our team, when we partnered with others, I wouldn't suggest that at this point. The interest rates are just too crazy.
Yeah.
So there's something called the revenue to price ratio. That's really going to determine not only like kind of which market you're in, but which property and which market it works. So it's just taking that price and divide, or the revenue and divided by the price, the purchase price. And if your ratio is above like a 20 to 30%, that's usually going to be something you might want to dig deeper into. Anything under 20, now not even breaking even with the way mortgage costs and all the expenses go. But which markets, I mean, and similar to multifamily, you know, you chase the landlord friendly, policy friendly states and cities and things like that. So I mean, Arizona is a great place. People like to visit the sun.
Yeah.
People like to visit Florida, for example. Florida is getting more expensive with all the insurance increases, and the same is for short-term rentals. And the price of properties got up a lot there. So a lot of stuff isn't really working anymore there, especially beachfront. But even, at beachfront, usually those properties are just going to be a little too expensive. I know like people are big into Myrtle Beach back in the day, and you could probably get stuff still there, but it just has to pencil. Places in Tennessee, Indiana, and surprisingly, these Midwest markets are actually getting pretty popular, like Missouri and the Ozarks is a vacation destination.
Probably because of the TV show, which was great.
Could be. But the price point, you can buy something out there. You asked like what we buy now. If I was targeting something, it's going to depend on your budget.
Yeah.
So someone can buy a property in, say, Michigan or Illinois or Indiana as a short-term rental and probably spend $150 purchase price.
Yeah.
But they're going to put what, like $30 down plus some renovation or furnishing. So you can do a lot more in those markets. It just depends on your budget. We're typically looking at 4 bedrooms. And the $300,000 to $500,000 range might be where we're looking now. So,
got it. And we're recording this in kind of early April 23. So we're in this kind of high interest rate, high inflation, recession fears, all that fun stuff. So I know you don't have a crystal ball, but what's your kind of outlook on this year? Are you still a buyer? Are you actively searching for multifamily? Are you actively looking for short-term rentals, given kind of, you know, some of the things we discussed with interest rates, where they are and everything?
Yeah. So we did 4 short-term rental acquisitions last year. So I'm still in the stabilization of those and getting those under. So I'm actually not hunting for this next quarter. We are looking at a multifamily deal, however, for this next quarter. And hence why I'm opening a 506B fund just as we speak, even because I know I'd like to get a sophisticated deal, but it's around like a 60 unit. So it's a smaller one that I'd like to take down for the quarter. I still think multifamily is a rock and like it's not going anywhere. Yeah. But that being said, if I was getting started, short-term rental is a great way to get started. I think that's why I launched the coaching program, is because for someone getting started, a 60 unit is just like way too far out there. And to be a passive investor, sometimes I kind of use the salary range, but someone making like $100,000 might not be able to do their only 25 grand into a syndication. You know, maybe that might not be the best play because that locks it up for 5 years. Maybe the best play might be, okay, 25 grand on a $120,000 property in Michigan.
Right.
You look at the numbers, these things can generate like 30, 40,000. Gross a year. So maybe that's a faster trajectory to their goal. So yeah, check markets, watch those interest rates, know the LTVs are going to be a little lower now. You're looking at like 70% LTV as a residential guy, maybe 75 if you're lucky. But if it's a commercial deal, you're looking at 60.
Yeah, it's hard. I was talking to a couple of partners that I look at deals in because I live in Austin. So we look in Texas. And if you can find a deal that pencils and works in this market, it could be a home run, because odds are your interest rates are going to be lower when you refinance in 2 to 3 years. So if you can make it work in this environment with bridge debt, or if you can lock yourself into do like a loan assumption and get somebody else's loan that's at a low rate that they bought, you know, maybe they bought the deal last year or 2 years ago, that's kind of the slam dunk in my mind. There are just few and far between. I have talked to some brokers and property managers that there's some distress starting to happen in the market where people that did buy deals in the last 2 years that are maybe undercapitalized or weren't prepared for interest rates going through the roof, they're going to have to sell because they just can't continue to operate the business, right, which is essentially operate the property. So yeah, I think 2023, I've said it on multiple podcasts, you know, it's the year of the operator. You could buy a deal in the last few years and it would work out, but now you have to actually operate it efficiently, find good asset managers. And those are the deals that are going to actually work and still provide returns to investors. So yeah, I think it's super important. Totally. So I guess I want to kind of transition here. So we talked a little about kind of your transition. And one thing I wanted to talk about that's kind of interesting for you specifically is that you're a family in the business, right? You and your wife are in the business together. Is she full-time too, or you guys both kind of full-time in the business?
Yeah, we're both full-time. She probably works 4 or 5 hours where I'm working the typical 7 hour or, you know, something a little longer. Sometimes I work a lot longer, but I try to take advantage of taking breaks whenever we can. That's the advantage of having your own that's business. Right. But yeah, she still works in the business. We have a 4-year-old and a 15-month-old. So that's probably okay. Why she's taking a little more time off.
She's got other opportunities and priorities to focus on. Right. So that makes sense.
But my brother works in the business. His wife works in the business. She manages actually all our short-term rentals.
Okay.
And then we have a couple other team members on the team as well.
That's awesome. How is it working with family and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, it's been 5 years. Well, I've probably been 4 years. Our wives joined us in 2019. So it's definitely in the beginning, it's tough when you have to call out a family member on not executing something.
I'm going to go sit down for dinner with them. Thanksgiving.
Yeah, like try not to talk business with my wife a lot unless it's absolutely necessary. Because it's definitely something that you learn doing, but I will say it brought us a lot closer. We've spoken every week for the last 4 years, which I don't think many brothers or siblings or sister-in-laws, brother-in-laws can even say they do that. So it's been really cool to that regard, just being able to share. Like we start our meeting with just like a segue where we're just chit-chat, and really cool to see the kids in the back every week, see different things going on. So it's been really brought us a lot closer together.
That's awesome. That's my wife and I, she's a W-2 job, and her and I are very lockstep on the whole real estate game from the very beginning after I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and then had that light bulb moment and then was nervous that she wouldn't have it, but she did. So we're, you know, we went down the path together. So it's been a lot of fun, but it is tough to kind of make sure that you don't always just talk about business and what's going on. Cause obviously, you know, you're married and a family and all that fun stuff. I want to kind of transition to the final kind of triple threat, 3 questions that I ask every guest. So what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey?
Yeah, I think it's understand the goal, understand what you're doing. You can waste a lot of time chasing a lot of different strategies. I think the best thing I ever heard was, it's you do get clarity, commitment, action. So clear on the goal, commit to it, take action. And most people kind of skip some part of that. So they're not clear on the goal, or they actually don't commit to it. They kind of dip their foot in. Or the third one is they never take action because they're scared, no money, don't understand it, whatever it is. But do those 3. That's a great recipe for success. So
no, I think that's great. Awesome. What's your favorite real estate or in business book that you're into right now?
Let's see. What am I doing right now? I like Alex Hormozi's right now. I don't know if you've heard that one.
I've heard the name, I feel like.
So he's got, I think it's like how to make $1 million offers or something like that. I can't remember the exact title right now, but it's so cool because it's like a marketing book versus just real estate, but it's very similar. And I guess I'm more reading that right now because I have a coaching program and I'm launching.
Yeah, you got to market it.
But it's this whole idea of how you launch things with scarcity, how you launch things with timelines. So there's only 30 days left to invest, you know, like very cool tactics for marketing. So I'm liking that book right now.
Very cool. So last question, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off of passive income, what would you do?
Yeah, what would I do? I think what I'm doing now, which is teaching, which is coaching. I didn't buy any programs when I started and I kind of stumbled a lot and we did pretty good. We sold a bunch of property in 2021 and I hit the number at least for stationary revenue. So now I'm generating reoccurring revenue, but I do what I'm doing now. I really like teaching people. I think everybody likes being looked at as an expert of some kind. So it's nice to be that side as well, but it's also cool to help people get there faster and help people understand this real estate investing game because it's actually very small. The people that invest into real estate and private equity game is actually very small compared to how many people are just dumping money into 401ks and social security retirement plans they'll never see.
That's how a lot of people grow up, right? You grow up and you're taught what your parents were taught and they're taught what their parents were taught. And so you kind of just follow along. And then sometimes you get stumble upon a book or a podcast or something that kind of just like, wait, there's other options. I can actually do something different. That makes a lot of sense. Awesome, man. Well, Chris, thank you very much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. It's great. I'm sure our guests took a ton out of it. So, man, thanks for being on the show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I hope everyone took something away from this episode. I've got another one dropping soon, so keep listening. Thank you.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.